This is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The contracting budget for San Antonio City government is becoming all the more clear and real. The developing bond package is looking less grand compared to previous bonds. San Antonio leaders are openly discussing a city property tax rate increase because the city's budget outlook has deteriorated. A key point is that this has not yet been finalized, as no decision has been made. San Antonio has not raised its city property tax since 1990. There is also a household affordability issue that needs to be considered because many residents are facing increases. As SAWS is talking about, that may need more money for its aging infrastructure. CPS Energy is openly discussing the possibility of the ask for a rate increase due to its budget planning. We're now joined by San Antonio Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones to tell us more about this and other issues. And Mayor Jones, welcome back to The Source.
Hi, good to be with you.
Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Have a question for Mayor Jones? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. So let's talk about the bond package and how that is being put together conservatively.
Well, as it must, considering it is half the value of what it was in 2022, excuse me. So 600-ish is where we're at, as you pointed out, if the council does not decide to raise property taxes. And so we're looking at potentially two property tax raises, right? One to close the budget gap for the FY27 budget, as well as to increase capacity for the bond, right? So there's two instances there, and as you rightly point out, the utilities are also asking for a rate increase. The SAWS rate increase, in my mind, makes a lot more sense in light of what needs to be, frankly, addressed. They have roughly $600 million worth of capital improvements that I cannot speak to why previous administrations, have not taken that on. But that is not something that SAWS can eat. And when we look at what that would look at, when we look at what that would be across 4 years, it's about $5 a year, right, for 5 years. But we're talking about investing in infrastructure like wastewater plants, right? Things you don't mess around with. And unfortunately, the life cycle of these of this infrastructure, it's well beyond where it should be for some of these improvements. That's one thing. So there's a public health and a public safety issue related to continuing to have these function well past their original life cycle. Secondly, as SAWS pointed out in their briefing, some of the things that need to be invested in need to be replaced because they are in fact more expensive to maintain than just to replace. So there's actually a cost savings measure by replacing some of that infrastructure that is costly to maintain. I think what's important also, I sit on the board, so I have scrubbed through that presentation many, many times with the staff, and the four-year proposed rate increase, what that allows for is a smoothing of that across the years versus, trying to frankly put all of that rate increase within just 2 years, which I think would be too much of a shock for many in our community. So as proposed, that 2 year increase, the 4 year increase, the first 2 years are set because you need that capital to invest in those projects. Now, what the rate increase may look like in those last 2 years is TBD. And this is as explained, right? We don't know what's going to happen to the debt. Right. And secondly, some of the efficiencies that they have invested in, it's not quite clear how much of a cost savings we actually may be able to realize as a result of those things. So, some of the investments in AI, for example, that help with preventative maintenance, as well as some of the other efficiencies, they may actually help to bring down whatever a potential rate increase might be in those last 2 years. But we won't know that until we see some of those in practice. So that's on the SAWS side. On the CPS side, I mean, their gap is $50 million. That's literally 1% of their budget. So in my mind, I'm less sympathetic to a rate increase there because they can eat that. When you look at our overall city budget, though, I think what was concerning to me, not only, obviously our financial policy is we've got a balance across 2 years, and we can do that. But I think it's important, and frankly, my background at the Pentagon and dealing with long-term contracts and frankly, financial decisions, you always want to look at what you're doing to yourself in the out years. And when we got our five-year outlook, I was concerned about the growth in that fifth year in our deficit. So last year, when we looked at our five-year outlook, that gap was about $220 million, right, in 2030. Now, if we're looking 5 years out, 2031, that deficit grows to $264 million. So in 1 year, we have grown our out-year deficit by 17%. That is unsustainable. I mean, you go look at that slide deck. I mean, every other slide on there says this is structurally imbalanced. And so what I've talked to the city manager about is potentially obviously keeping the financial policy where you balance in the first 2 years, but how might we also impose looking at some cap on what we want out year growth and deficit to be. 17% is not sustainable. So if you're looking at, hey, let's balance in the first 2 years, but let's also maybe potentially look at a policy whereby, hey, we can't let out year growth increase by 10%, right? Like that's the max. So then you're looking at these things from both ends. Because, I mean, look, cities have gone bankrupt, right? Like it's not an impossible scenario. And so I just want us to be really cognizant of what we're doing to ourselves in light of the financial environment and frankly, no signs of it abating.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is looking at cities that are raising their tax rates. It's happening all across the state. What's happening here in San Antonio is not unique. This is happening everywhere. Any problems with the AG's office with these proposals for a tax rate increase?
Well, I think we always need to be able to manage ourselves, right? I think we best know what our challenges are, what our opportunities are. So I think, you know, we are a stronger community when we have as much agency to help ourselves. I realize I didn't specifically answer your question on the bond. So let me go back to that. The bond, again, half of what it was in 2022 if we don't increase the property tax. And so for those that were not able to watch the session where we discussed it, I specifically asked for a couple of things, right? Let's really make sure that we have a good understanding of what they're called leveraged opportunities, right? So i.e., we would put in towards something that is largely financed with other people's money, right? I think there is great value in exploring as many of those opportunities as possible. And of course, understanding the ROI as a result. For example, there's some infrastructure around the port that would invest it in, help that be more attractive and frankly, help further strengthen their large contribution to our community. So I think we look at those a little bit differently. I think it's also important that we are looking at, for example, fully funding those recommendations that were outlined in the Kleinfelder report. This is the report written after the major flood last year. They outlined a couple of things. So between our budget and the bond, I want to make sure our community knows that we are seriously addressing those things in the interest of public safety. And because, frankly, we're just not getting a lot of help from the state on these flood projects, right, which we should be. As well as just one other piece, just because there's a lot of attention on, you know, a potential another affordable housing bond, $150 million. I think we have to look at these things a little bit differently and truly understand what we're trying to accomplish. Perfect example, last time we set aside $5 million for home ownership. And that largely went to single family homes, right? And I think, look, home ownership is a great goal. For me, though, home ownership is not a goal in and of itself. In my mind, I want you to have equity. I want you to be generating wealth. And so if our measure is how many people can we help generate equity and generate wealth, then maybe we're not investing that in single-family homes on large lots, right? Maybe we're looking at something a little bit denser that allows for that wealth to be spread across. And again, the focus being wealth generation. Not my goal is not for you to have a lawn to mow. My goal is for you to again have equity. So these are the kinds of things that I think we really need to be scrutinized much more strongly in light of the decreased resources and ultimately what are we trying to achieve for our community.
But there typically is a very public process in putting together a bond package.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, we talked a little bit about, I think there was agreement largely on the kind of the same committee structure, the timeline. Again, I support a May election. We have talked ad nauseum about in moving the municipal elections from May to November, the benefits of that, which is increased turnout, as well as hearing from more of our neighbors, and there's a cost savings. Some of my colleagues feel a little bit differently about that in light of, frankly, the need to move faster on some of these projects. And I can appreciate that, but I think, always hearing from more people on these things is of utility. I think what was also informative for my colleagues and I, you've heard a lot of us that have expressed support for a separate bond proposition just for those items related to downtown infrastructure around Project Marvel, right?
Right. So that's where you get into the idea of the must-haves and the wants, and letting the people have their say on that. We're going to take a break here. I'm going to get Andy on the air with Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones when we come back from here. If you got a question, give us a call. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones is in the studio today, and she is here to take your questions. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Andy on the phones, and Andy, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm a real old guy. I'm in my 80s, but back in the 1980s, I worked with Mayor Cisneros to bring the national meeting of an organization in which I belonged here to San Antonio. We had thousands of people here for over a week. And I was wondering, what plans does the mayor have to try to increase the local community by bringing in tourism? We have many great tourist attractions here, but I don't think we have world-class convention facilities like they have in Dallas and Houston. So we would have to target groups that fit the accommodations that we have to offer. At least that's my opinion. And I'd like to know what the mayor thinks.
All right, Andy, I appreciate your call. We do have world-class convention facilities, and I would argue they're pretty darn good. But where are we with bringing conventions to San Antonio? I wonder about how we have this bathroom law here in Texas and how it targets people who are transgender or anyone, basically. And if that is a hindrance to bringing national conventions to San Antonio.
Yeah, in fact, actually, obviously people remember last fall or maybe late summer when I discussed, making a bid for the DNC to come here. Frankly, after conversations with their leadership, between the bathroom bill and between the laws around reproductive health care, that was going to be a really hard sell, which is why we ultimately did not pursue that, because it was clear we were not going to be competitive. And so not only, there's those things that I think affect our competitiveness for large conventions. I think our facilities, frankly, are sufficient. And when people come to San Antonio for their conventions, there is, I think the convention center is one aspect of it. I think folks are coming here, though. One, they're coming here for all the tourist attractions that you rightly mentioned. They're coming here for the Riverwalk. They're coming here, you know, if they're bringing their family, they know they can take their family to SeaWorld and to Fiesta Texas and all these other things. So I think I'd welcome seeing data that speaks to, what the convention center itself offers is as important as some of the other things. Because when you actually look at the data, 80% of the conventions across the country go to about 20 cities, and we are already in that list. And so when you think about what's happening in the other cities, Austin, Dallas, Houston, they're all making huge investments in their convention centers, like massive investments in that. And so when you look at what is currently proposed in terms of expanding our own convention center, we would not compete with those convention centers just based on how they are expanding, both in Houston and in Dallas and in Austin. So I think we have to be really smart about the ROI analysis, what we're investing, what we're getting, and how that actually ultimately makes us competitive, when in fact the thing that makes us most competitive are the things that are outside of that convention center.
Well, speaking of improvements to the convention center and the convention attractions of San Antonio, let's talk about Project Marvel and the City Hall contracts. You were the lone no vote when City Council approved the first two Project Marvel contracts worth millions of dollars. What were you voting against, or how did that go down? And I was really interested in when I heard about how some council members were not. They didn't want to have the whole contract explored on the dais. They just kind of wanted to do a vote without really explaining to the participants, like, what was going on.
Yeah. I mean, look, the last time we had a public update on all of the downtown efforts was in January. And so these were high profile contracts and the first contracts that we were voting on as it relates to all of that, and not an insignificant amount of money. And so the public update then that was supposed to happen prior to us voting on the contracts, I thought that was the appropriate order. You give the public an update on the overall plan so that when you're discussing contracts related to implementation of the plan, people can follow along. And I recognize, as my colleague mentioned, that it's 37 slides, but 37 slides, I thought we could have sat through 37 slides if you're going to be voting on millions of dollars of contracts. And I think, there is lots of interest, of course, in these major investments, not only in and of themselves, but also given all the stories people are hearing about our financial situation. So, yes, I think you need to bring the people along, explain to them some of the changes. For example, one of the changes I wanted folks to understand is, previously in January, we were briefed on a parking feasibility study. This time we're going to be briefed on a downtown mobility study. Those are different in scope. And when you look at the two slides, they're much different in scope. The latter is much more comprehensive. By the way, that one this time came with a price tag, $500,000, right? So half a mil. So I thought that was worthy of discussion and clarification for the public. Because when you're talking about a downtown mobility study, you want to make sure that we're all planning for the same thing. So what are your assumptions about the number of people you're having to move, the number of businesses you're accounting for? What does that look like in terms of, when you're thinking about downtown mobility, what are you moving in and out during an event, not an event, et cetera, et cetera? So those are the kinds of things. This thing only passed by 52%. And so I think there's a lot of folks that need to be brought along, and a public update before you vote on contracts, I think, is appropriate.
It's not asking a lot.
Hey, brother, I'm with you. I didn't think it was a lot either. 37 slides. I mean, please, come on.
So we heard from the Democratic nominee for Texas governor, Gina Hinojosa, talking about redistricting and questions about disenfranchisement of so many people in the state of Texas. Can you give us an update on your voting commission?
Yeah. So, thank you for raising that. I think when we are looking at what that could mean, even for our own local community, the redistricting effort, rather, that would have San Antonio, the second largest city in the state, represented largely by one representative, Representative Castro, right? He would largely have that within the city limits. I think that is, I mean, that's short of what you would expect in light of that. So yes, I ask that we look at what we can do locally. One, increase awareness that an election is taking place, increase people's awareness of what it takes to vote and what's on the ballot. And then secondly, what are ways in which we can also increase access to the ballot box? These recommendations I've asked we have and be informed by July 4th. That is not a coincidence. That also, though, allows sufficient time for us to review those as a council and then share those with the elections administrator and help as we approach November.
Also, what is happening with the Veterans Housing Anti-Discrimination Ordinance?
Yeah, so this was the other topic that was up for discussion the same day as the Project Marvel contracts. So, you know, I advocated for a version of that ordinance that would have completely eliminated discrimination against veterans using a voucher, a federal voucher of any kind. Because, look, there in my mind, there is no good reason to discriminate against veterans. My colleagues put forward another version of that that limited that ordinance to landlords that own 5 properties or more. Additionally, instead of my penalty, which would have been $500 on your first infraction of denying a veteran housing based on their source of income, their proposed penalty was first time is a warning, second time is training, third time is finally some kind of financial penalty. And to be clear, that watered down penalty, I mean, there are more consequences for leaving your dog off the leash than there are for discriminating against a veteran. I think that's not where we need to be, frankly, as the only veteran on the council. And we heard from lots and lots of veterans during that council meeting about what it meant for them. I mean, we have, and the reason the enforcement is really important is because when you're talking about a veteran who's utilizing a voucher, you're talking about folks with PTSD, right? You're talking about folks who need help with housing and getting that health care that they have earned. And so we actually heard from a veteran who, because he had been denied so many times because he wanted to use a voucher, he no longer lives. He doesn't live in the city. He lives in like shirts or something. Moreover, he had somebody from the American GI Forum sharing his story because his PTSD is so severe, he doesn't like speaking in public. So that's why the enforcement part is important, because if something happens, you want people to be able to advocate for themselves. But let's look at who's actually advocating for themselves. Someone with PTSD. Are they more likely to, frankly, just deal with it or seek the recourse? And so we will review this policy again in 6 months, and I will continue to support zero discrimination for veterans in our community. Moreover, let me just say, when you looked side by side at what my ordinance would do versus that of my the amended version, the amended version allowed for 2/3 less of housing options in the city than my version. Why on God's green earth would you say a veteran only gets 2/3 of what every other citizen in this community deserves?
Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones, coming in here Monday with the mayor. Appreciate you coming in, taking calls. You're giving us an update on what's happening with the bond, rate issues, all sorts of developments in San Antonio. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.